Hello, I'm Niall Kahn, and this is the PPRO Podcast. Every other week, I sit down with James Booth to discuss the latest innovations, investments, and acquisitions that have taken place over the last weeks. James, welcome back to the podcast. You were off for a few weeks, but I'm very pleased to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good summer vacation, good break, but good to be back in the office.
And in the meantime, last time you were on the show, you mentioned that you're going to watch a Netflix show, and you promised to buy something with your voice. Did you do either of these things?
I watched the Netflix show, a show called The Great Hack. Very, very good. I recommend everybody should watch it. But I didn't buy anything off. I didn't buy anything with my voice. I used Alexa a couple times to set a timer and to ask me what the weather was, but that's the extent of it so far. Hopefully, maybe give me a couple months or a year or so before I start buying things with my voice.
Okay, well, I'll definitely hold you to that. But in the meantime, let's talk about some of the interesting news stories from the last couple of weeks.
Perfect. Let's get stuck in.
What would you like to kick off with?
I think the article regarding Americans sticking with cards. I remember the last time we spoke, we discussed about LG releasing a new e-wallet in the US market. We discussed about how relevant it is now that there's so many players in the marketplace. And just last week, I think it was, JP Morgan Chase shut down their wallet.
Yeah, absolutely. JP Morgan Chase is one of the larger players in the US banking industry. And it seemed when they started off with their payment app, it seemed like a really good place to start. They already had a massive user base already there, but it never really took off.
Yeah. And to be honest, I'm not that surprised about it. I mean, e-wallets are very popular globally, but in the US, not so much. I mean, even if you look at Apple Pay, the Apple Pay acceptance rates in the US is significantly lower than the rest of the world. And it comes down to the infrastructure, the payments infrastructure of the US market. They have a very old legacy point of sale infrastructure. So it's great building these cool wallets. It's great building Apple Pay. But if consumers can't use them, they're inevitably going to fail. You look at Apple Pay here in the UK, they've got an amazing infrastructure, so you can literally use it everywhere. I use Apple Pay several times a day. I actually rarely use my card anymore. But last year, I lived in the States for a year. I tried to use Apple Pay as much as possible, but the majority of the small to medium shops and even the majority of the large shops wouldn't accept contactless payments. So I think they're just a little bit behind the trend there. So until the infrastructure catches up, I don't see e-wallets or any kind of pass-through wallet picking up in the US. I think they're almost waiting for the next technology to come, waiting for the POS to be reinvented or some form of consumer straight-to-merchant technology being built that would cause a POS terminal or some legacy device to become void. And I think that's really what needs to happen there. I mean, I don't know about you. Niall, you're originally from the States. What is your experience with contactless there?
Well, I confess that I now live in Germany. So in Germany, everything is paid with cash everywhere, no matter what. So when I went back to the U.S. last year,
so I suppose that's even further behind.
Yeah, it's crazy here. It's definitely like 20 or 30 years behind everywhere else, it seems, at least in payments. But when I went back to the U.S. this spring, I was able to pay with contactless pretty much everywhere I went in California. And it may just be that California is a little bit more advanced or early adapters compared to the rest of the U.S., but I didn't really have any problems.
Yeah, I mean, you do raise a good point. I mean, California is, I think, more advanced than the majority of the US states. I spent most of my time in the East Coast. East Coast was definitely not as advanced as California, but I mean, it shows that they still have a long way to go. So if it's only a handful of states offer the ability for you to use contactless, and we're not even talking e-wallets, as the article we are referring to mentions, then it's got a long way to go.
All right. Well, let's go on to our next topic. You found this week, and this ties into the e-wallets very, very well. It's about the creation of EMPSA, the European Mobile Payment Systems Association. And it seems to be this association of seven firms that are getting together to make a European-wide payments infrastructure.
I mean, this is one that I was actually quite pleased at, but surprised to see at the same time, because I've always thought that over time we've seen on the PSP side a lot of fragmentation in the market. On the payments scheme side, we've also been seeing a lot of fragmentation. And this is one of the first signs of consolidation. It hasn't taken the same form that I thought it would, but it's very cool. I mean, it's basically the definition of frenemies. They're all local-based payment methods within each country, and they're going to create a unified QR code so that a Vipps user based in Norway would be able to transact through the MBWay QR code system in Portugal. So you as a traveler can effectively initiate a wallet-based transaction anywhere throughout this network. But what it means, and the interesting thing is what it means from the merchant side, is now a merchant only needs to integrate Vipps into their checkout, and now they have access to all of the consumers from the other wallets.
Now, let's actually talk about those other wallets. So you mentioned Vipps already in MBWay. What are the other players that are joining this association?
So there's Blue Code and Twint, which are Swiss-based wallets, Denmark-based MobilePay, Belgium's Bancontact Payconiq, and then there's obviously the Portuguese MBWay and Sweden-based Swish, and the Norway Vipps.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting stuff because already they have 25 million users between them. But what I was interested to read in other places, what this comes on the heels of an announcement in June that Alipay would be partnering with some of the very same players. Do you think Alipay has kind of kicked them into high gear in order to get this done?
Yeah, I would think so. Effectively, the EMPSA, E-M-P-S-A, they haven't actually published anything. They haven't actually done any work to create this framework. They've essentially just announced that they have the intention of building this, and it's effectively an agreement. It's a letter of intent that this is what they're going to be rolling out. So I think it's very much hot off the heels of the Alipay announcement that they're doing the same thing. I think it's competition's pushing them into this position. And I think it's great for the overall market. It's great for consumers. And it certainly makes the lives of PSPs and merchants much easier because their path to integrating into all of these large consumer bases gets reduced. I think this is one to watch closely. I think it's probably going to happen in other markets. It's the unlikely, well, from my point of view, it's not how I saw the market consolidating. I thought payment methods would start acquiring one another. But this is a very nice thing that they've done. It's a very cool and nice scheme. I mean, I'll definitely be watching this one quite closely, or at least both of the initiatives that have been announced.
Yeah, it's also, I think, kind of uniquely European in that most of these payment schemes are very local, right? So they're not really going after each other's market shares in any way. It's just that when their consumers do travel to another country, they will have the ability to use that other local payment method there.
Yeah. And I think Alipay has announced similar intentions throughout Africa. I think they're looking to work with some of the providers there to provide a similar experience so that Chinese consumers, when they travel through Africa, they can transact using the local rails. So the local merchants or local PSPs don't have to integrate directly into Alipay or through a PSP or through another process. It simplifies an already complicated or overly complicated ecosystem. So any type of initiative like this is something to watch.
Very cool. Well, we will definitely keep a close eye on that then. So one of the selling points of local payment methods, like the seven e-wallets that are working together now, is security, right? So it's making sure that the end consumer doesn't get cheated, there's no fraud, all their data is fairly secure. But this is not something that is common, right? The internet is full of threats, and this week there's been some new revelations about Facebook.
Yeah, it's another one. And I mean, this almost ties into the documentary that I watched that I announced the last time I was on this podcast, that a huge company like that, it's so important for them to gain trust. But again and again, they're proving that they can't be trusted. So what I think it was over 400 million Facebook users' records were exposed online. I mean, I don't know. This is not the last time we're going to see this. It's not good for them, but I think it just highlights the importance of data as a human right. I think there's a serious need to build frameworks and actually build laws surrounding data. I think the laws have not had time to catch up to advancements in social media, in payments, in any type of online identification or online existence that we have.
Yeah, and this just seems that the information was on a completely random server.
Yeah.
There was no password protection. It was found by a security researcher who could not find the server's owner and then reached out to TechCrunch to tell them about this.
Yeah, I know. And now it makes you wonder how many other cases are there that have not been exposed or are probably just still lying out there. I mean, I think our data is just sprayed across the internet and we need to have some kind of way to sift through it. I think in a lot of cases, we're a bit too late. I think the EU is doing quite a good job in forming some kind of data rights laws. There's GDPR, there's a lot of this, but even GDPR, I mean, I've seen here in the UK, GDPR is not being abided by a lot of firms. Yes, there's fines, and I'm sure big banks and corporations will get fined, but small and medium-sized enterprises are kind of flying underneath the radar.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is also the same week which in YouTube has been fined a scant $170 million for gathering information on what children have been watching on YouTube.
Yeah, that's a bit scary.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the agreement was the fine, but it turns out that YouTube can hold on to that information. And potentially when these children are of age, YouTube can go back into that data, access it, and then see, and then connect that data to the children who are now 10 years older or whatever it is.
So even though they've been fined, they still own the data.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, it's stuff like that where the laws just don't fit the crime. I mean, yes, you can fine YouTube, but I mean, they still own the data. It's like somebody going into a shop and robbing a shop, but saying, okay, yeah, you can go to jail, but you can keep all the money you've stolen.
That's precisely it, yeah. And while we're talking about robbery and theft, let's talk about easy money with millennials. It turns out the millennials are the most likely to fall victim to online bank fraud, according to the Financial Times.
Who would have thought of that? I mean, historically, you'd think it would be sort of the older population, the part of the population that's not accustomed to technology. I mean, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, they said one of the driving factors in this was that millennials are so used to having things work instantly that they are really willing and eager to share their information to make sure they get their purchases go through.
Well, I suppose, I mean, who reads terms and conditions? Who reads most of the guides? If I'm thinking we're so bombarded by so many different services out there, I mean, if I look on my iPhone, there's actually a handful of apps where you just go through, click everything, okay, autofill name, autofill email address, autofill password, and just sign me up for some service. And you don't actually know what you're signing up for.
Yeah, I will have to go through my financial statements now and make sure that I am not being a victim of fraud.
Well, let's hope open banking doesn't get hacked, because I think I've tested out almost every open banking app there is out there. So all of these institutions have my bank's login details.
And thanks to the Facebook hack, they probably have all your personal pictures as well.
Probably, yeah. So actually, I'm going to go ahead and delete all my profiles.
That's a great idea. Well, James, thanks very much for joining me today.
No, thanks for having me. Good to be back. Good to be back on the show. And I'll speak to you next time for sure.
All right. Ciao.
Cool. Take it easy.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you're enjoying it, make sure to leave a review on iTunes and subscribe on the podcatcher of your choice. If you'd like to stay up to date with PPRO, make sure to follow PPRO on social media at PPRO_payments. And if there are any news stories that you think we missed, make sure to send an email to podcast@ppro.com. The PPRO podcast only sounds good because of Andre Ratke. All right, until next time.